Good to see everybody. We are I'm really happy to see everybody. It is the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and we had a great Thanksgiving over at our house. I hope you all had a great time. We had a couple things happen this week. One is that we want to be praying for the Dorsett family. Nancy's brother passed away suddenly this week, and so they just decided to stay home today. But I want to take a minute and pray for them. I'm thankful for Jeffrey's here, but I want to pray for the Dorsetts and their family at the loss of Nancy's brother Mark and Mary Jane's son, of course. And anyhow, so let's just pray for them. Lord, I just thank you and praise you for the Dorsett family, and I just pray your blessing on them. I pray that you would just bring comfort to their hearts, that you would they would sense your love for them, and that they would sense our love for them as well. I pray, Father, that you would just give them peace at this time that's difficult, and that they could sense your presence in a real way that is beyond anything they've ever sensed before. Bless them, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen. On the other side of things, I got a text message today from Jared and Keisha. And they had a baby. I get Terry and Kathy, our grandparents, for the how many at the time? 10th. They hit double figures. So there we go. And Marie Grace Jordan was born on the 25th at 4:44 a.m. I like that very round numbers, 4:44. And 7 pounds, 1 ounce, 19 inches long, and both mother and baby are doing great. So that was the text I got from Jared this morning. So congratulations, Jordans, on the new baby. So we're in our series on Created to Celebrate. This is the celebration or the, you know, holiday time of the year. And I do think that it's one of the things, this is a big, huge holiday, big time of celebration and festivals or whatever. And each week I've been kind of taking a look at different festivals. One, the first week I think we talked about the floating lanterns in Southeast Asia. Then the next week we had the Calgary Stampede. And then last week was the Tomatina in Spain, the world's biggest tomato fight. And then I thought it kind of like moving around continents. So today we have one from Africa. And so let's take a look at this. Africa, I know a lot of you are probably not super familiar with the geography of Africa, so I thought I'd bring a map in. And this is a festival that's held in Burkina Faso, which is, they just have Burkina on this map, and it's, here's the map of the country, and then it's in, it's called the Festima, a festival of African masks. And it's at this town, Deudongo. And the festival kind of looks like this. Some of the masks. These are masks, but they seem a little bit more than masky, and based on my understanding of the word mask, and I would call them more costumey, but whatever, that's not my call. And here's another one, and then I have a video of them, and I want to kind of talk about this festival just a tiny bit, and kind of use that to lead into our celebration that we're going to be talking about today. So this is about a 2-minute video. So, let's see, is it going to? There we go.
Nous, c'est le Saoudi. Nous venons de la Côte d'Ivoire, précisément à Boafé. Ils sont pas fatigués, ils se réunissent et puis ils commencent à danser au clair de lune. Et jusque-là, ils ont pu agréer un masque qu'on appelle le Gela. Et c'est ce Gela qui a créé sa fille qu'on appelle Gela Lou Zaouli. International. ils ont fait des sorties sur l'Europe, sur l'Asie, en Asie. Donc ils dansent bien. Nous dansons bien. C'est bon? On prend, il y a plusieurs danseurs. Maintenant, on fait le classement en Côte d'Ivoire. Il a été le premier.
You have some pretty good footwork there, I've noticed. The thing I thought was kind of interesting about this is that this is, if you caught it, I'm sure all of you are just like totally fluent in French, but he did notice that they're from Côte d'Ivoire, which is Ivory Coast, and another one because it's an international festival of masks. So the different ones were from different countries. They do have the festival is every 2 years. It's in Burkina Faso, and it's a celebration of this. I'm not sure why we are kind of losing some. I've lost my connection here. There we go. Let's try it one more time. But one of the things that I was going to say is that the mask and that this is like a cultural celebration that they're doing. But it comes from a religious background. And these costumes and masks, they came from the idea that everything is inhabited by spirits, and then you kind of hide from the spirits / have this look, costume, that then helps you appease and contact the spirits. And one of the things they do is they use these masks and these dances at all kind of like major life events. So they would be at funerals, they would be at weddings, at births of children, etc., they would use these, and this ties in that part of Africa. It's about 40% of, or 40+% of the population is involved in the traditional religions, which are this kind of spirit worship thing, where they worship the spirits of all kinds of things. And then the other part is there's about 40%, or you know, it's 40-some percent, and of Muslim. And then about 10% Christian. That's divided about half Catholic, about half non-Catholic. And that's kind of what goes on there. But every area has its own festival. And so right now, this festival, the Festima, in that town in Burkina Faso, is it's technically a cultural festival, but that's what the culture comes from. And that was the purpose of those masks. What we want to do is talk about other celebrations, and I was kind of thinking about these celebrations that come, and the ones we've talked about so far, we've talked about Passover, we talked about first fruits, we talked about unleavened bread, we talked about the Feast of Tabernacles, and then this week, of all those are yearly feasts, but then there's a feast that the Jews had every week, and that's called Shabbat. And that's every week, and we call it Sabbath. And then it runs from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. So, for example, if we were going the Sabbath that ended last night at sundown, it would have started Friday. I checked the weather thing, and the sundown Friday was at 4:43, and then sundown Saturday was also 4:43. So that would have been from 4:43, 4:45 to the next day at that time. That's Sabbath. Now, Sabbath is something that, one of the things about it, it's weekly. Like the other events, you remember things, and okay, remember the Passover, you do that in the spring. The unleavened bread, we remember that in the spring. The first fruits, the thing, each one has its day where you do that. And then the others, this is a weekly remembrance. And I think that this affects us and applies to us in the sense that God wants us to have like this continual remembrance. And like to be reminded, it's not just, hey, once a year we celebrate. Hey, let's, Jesus was born, we'll have a celebration. Okay, Easter, we'll have a celebration, and that's pretty much it for Christianity. No, it's a day by day, and part of it is we give one day a week, or he asked them to give one day a week to him. And my, can you just go to the next slide? I'm having connection issues here. Remember, so let's just read. This was originated in chapter 20. Let me try this another thing here, because I really would like to have my notes here. Give one more shot. If not, we'll do it. Let me just read the text. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or a sojourner who is within your gates. So this first verse is kind of a way to define, well, what is it? First of all, you're going to keep the Sabbath. Okay, so, well, what is that? You go 6 days you're going to work, and then you're going to take a day off. But then he also says, look, not only do you take a day off, but you not only don't work, but your son doesn't work, your daughter doesn't work, your servants, if you have any, they don't work, your animals don't work. If there's somebody traveling through, a sojourner, they don't work. It's a day off. Got it, guys? It's a day off. And I think that's kind of the whole idea. And I know sometimes I talk to people, and some among some Christians, there's like, oh, I have friends who are like really into the Sabbath, and you got to keep the Sabbath. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's not exactly how I operate, but hey, you know, and I think we'll get to that on why it is. But I do think the whole point of, now we're kind of like, there we go. But then the whole point of it is, well, what are we trying to accomplish here? And it really comes down to the heart. But there's a couple things. First of all, what is it? And I think before we can figure out, well, what are we going to do with our heart, let's just see what it was. First, you take the day off, and not only you, everybody else. So like a lot of Jews, they interpret this to mean, look, you can't, like, if you're going to follow this, then it's also not really right to go, well, I'm not going to work, but hey, would you do this for me? Would you do that for me? How about this? Will you do this? Will you do that? Like, wait a second. You're making everybody else work for you. Like, what's up with that? And that was kind of why he includes, you're not only you, but your kids, your family, this aren't going to work. Now, human beings are human beings. So we do look for workarounds. So I found some things I thought were kind of interesting on how do you get around this, and especially some things it doesn't work real well. The things that are really serious are work, and then also there's several verses that talk about starting fires, and like they would cook and make fire. So then the making fire is also kind of a big deal with the Sabbath. So there's kind of workarounds. Like, okay, is it making a fire to turn a light switch on? It's kind of works by heat, fire, is that? What about, what if you live in a high rise and if you start the elevator? Does that, like some kind of a fire going? How is that? So there's some issues and some difficulties. So what do you do? So let's see if this is going to actually work this time. Here we go, Sabbath. So there's a Sabbath elevator. The Sabbath elevator, on Jewish Sabbath and Jewish holidays, this elevator stops automatically on every floor. So you don't have to tell someone to do it. It's just that, and you're not going to start it. It's just going up and stopping at every floor, going down, stopping at every floor. It's kind of the slow elevator. One time, when we lived in Spain once, Michael and my oldest son, Michael, and we had this friend, Lucho, and he lived on the 16th floor of a building. And so then they made some kind of a bet that Michael said he could beat us to the bottom and he was going to take the stairs and we were going to take the elevator. So he ran down the stairs and at every stair, at every floor, he hit the button, the call button on the elevator. So we went down. Once you got ahead of the first one, then you hit the call button, then you have the doors open and close and all that. Meanwhile, he's hitting every button on the way down. Yeah, he beat us to the bottom. So then there's also, okay, what about your refrigerator? Because when you open the refrigerator door, it turns a light on. So you can put tape over the little button, or some of them have where there's a place where you can push the button up there and it just stays up there so the light won't come on. Or it stays where the light won't come on. And then, but then what about, and this is one of that Jesus kind of addresses, and we'll talk about, what about saving a life? What if you're a doctor? Do you not work? And somebody, you're going to let somebody bleed out because you're a doctor? No, that's an exception. Everybody that follows the Sabbath pretty much makes that an exception. And the other thing was reading. And that people, they'll just read. And some people think, well, if your job is reading, then maybe you shouldn't be reading. And that's kind of like, depends on, for you, if you read as pleasure, you're reading the Bible, reading something. Somebody said, at least you're not kindling fire. And some other smart guy said, but what if you're reading on a Kindle fire? So that's another issue. So and why is this? Why do you do this? In Exodus, it gives this as the reason. Why? Because in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And so, first, if we go to Genesis 2, at the beginning, he talked, you know, Genesis 1, he goes through the days. At the beginning of Genesis 2, it says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. And so part of the thing is, it's like, okay, look to God. God worked 6 days, then took a day off. And God's saying to you, work your 6 days, take the day off. Take a day off. And I think that part of the thing is sometimes we kind of can take the Sabbath, oh, that's a burden and you have to do it. But really, if you think about it, it's like, take a day off. Relax. Use it as a time to maybe focus on God. Use it as a day to say, and so to me, this is part of the reason I'm not really hung up on, well, are you focusing on God on Saturday or Sunday? The idea is, are we focusing on God in our life? Also, you know, I don't think that the crucial element is it's from this exact sundown to this sundown and this. That's kind of missing a little bit of the point. The point is, are we focusing on God? Are we willing to like sit back and go, wow, you know, God, it's amazing what you're doing in my life. Let's take a moment and focus, and let's do it every week. Let's take some time and put God into a priority place. Go to the next slide. Deuteronomy also talks about this. And here it says, the first part says pretty much the same thing. Go to the next slide. Okay. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. Now the next one. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male or servant, female servant, or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock, or the sojourner who is in within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. So same idea. You take your day off and you give everybody else the day off too. But then he gives a little different reasoning. Let's see if I'm kind of floating in and out here. This is pretty exciting from my side. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So the first reason in Exodus that you keep the Sabbath is because God kept the Sabbath. God worked 6 days and took a day off. But then he's also saying, here, the reasoning is a little bit different. It's the same command, pretty much almost word for word. But then this part is a little different. He gives a second reason why you keep the Sabbath. And he goes, because you were slaves in Egypt. So this ties this back in with the Passover, with the first fruits, with the unleavened bread, with all that stuff. And he's saying, look, you were slaves in Egypt, and God brought you out of Egypt. And I think part of the idea is this. You were, when they were slaves, they didn't get a day off. When they were slaves, you worked every day because that's what the Egyptians made you do. And he said, look, I brought you out of slavery. And then you know what happens is we put ourselves in our own slavery. And we say, look, I've got to work another day and another day and another day and another day. And if I take a day off, my business will collapse. If I take a day off, my boss will fire me. If I take a day off, my budget will fall apart. If I take a day off, I can't exist. No. You were a slave. Your life was horrible. And God says, and I pulled you out of that. You know what? Recognize that you take a day off. Take it off on me. I'm telling you, take a day off. And not only you, let your other people that work under you, they get the day off too. Take a day off. Because God's, number one, I was kind of thinking about this whole issue of taking a day off. And this is something that, look, among these things I talk about, this may be something that I struggle with. Let's just hypothetically say that. Okay? That I don't like to take a day off. I like to work every day. Then again, the things I do are the things I want, that I think God wants me to do. So I'm like, well, I don't know. Is this working or not working? Is this helping somebody? Is this, if I'm reading my Bible, am I working? Because I got to study. But then do I, like you say, there's like a lot of conflicting things going on here. So what is going, what do you do? Well, wait a second. God, I think about the church. And I think about what God's doing here at the church. And I think about it from my point of view, because I'm me. That's just the way it is, okay? But I kind of, sometimes I'm like, well, I don't know. What if, you know, what if this happens or that happens or the other thing happens? And you know what? God saved me. Jesus came. He paid the price. He's taken care of me for 40 years. I suppose he'll probably have it tomorrow too. And just take a break. Maybe what sometimes I need to just tell myself is, just don't breathe so fast. Take a deep breath. Relax. Recognize that God is in control. And I think that's a lot of what the Sabbath is about. God is in control. There's an example here that I think is kind of interesting on this whole idea of our life and now how it works and who's in control and how we can be in control. Over in Leviticus, go ahead to the next slide. Leviticus 16, I'm going to read a few verses, skip a few, and it's kind of long. I didn't want to read the whole thing, so you can go back and read Leviticus 16 anytime you like. I am about to rain bread. Remember, they were wandering around in the desert. They didn't have any food. They didn't have any bread. They're really upset. Nothing's really working for them. And Moses, what'd you do? Bring us out here to starve to death? And then God says, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gathered daily. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, at evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us? And he's like, okay, you're going to see what God's doing. And then verse 8, and Moses said, when the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. And he said, look, God's going to take care of you. Then we're going to skip a few verses to verse 18. But when they measured it with an omer, they were supposed to pick up an omer of grain or an omer of manna. Remember, they came out, and there's this stuff all over the ground, and they said in their language, what is this? And that's pronounced in Hebrew, manna. So then that became the name of the stuff that they had, which was it, like they're coming out, what is this? And that's what they called it in their language, what is this? And so it was always, what is this? And that's manna. So they measured it with an omer. Whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as they could, and Moses said to them, let no one leave any of it over till the morning. Now, when I was reading this, the first thing that struck me is, how much is an omer? Like, how much are they gathering? Like, what are we talking about here? So, luckily, there's a conversion online that one omer is 9.3 cups of dry U.S. And if you want to get a little pick, you know, it has even like a little converter thing. So if you put in two and a half omers, it comes out that that's 2.5 omers equals 23.25 cups. And if you want it in fractions, they'll do that for you. So that's pretty cool. So I thought that I would gather an omer of oatmeal. It's not exactly manna. But I was like, well, how much were they supposed to gather? So I went over and measured out 9 1/3 cups of oatmeal, put it in this bag. So that's an omer, more or less. I don't know that they had exactly the same cups. But really, this is like a portion for one person to eat for the day. He wasn't starving you. There was food there. So there was that. And then what happened is, let's go back to our text. But when they measured it with an omer, whoever gathered much had nothing left over. So if you thought, got kind of greedy and go, well, that's not enough, I'm going to get more, well, it still came out, you were fine. And if you gathered less, whoever gathered little had no lack. Each of them gathered as much as he could, and Moses said to them, let no one leave it over till the morning. And that was kind of a key issue. Don't leave it till the morning. So, but they're human beings, right? So some did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it till the morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. The other day we came into our, like, my wife probably doesn't like me telling this story, but I came into the house and I'm like, what is that? And, oh, it was like, you know how you have kitchen trash? You guys probably don't, because you're all like, you know, nobody here besides us generates garbage, okay? But went in there and it was like, oh, that's been there. I think it's ready to take out. Let's just take this out. Well, these guys had their leftovers of their manna, and they maybe gathered a little bit more, or they were like afraid. Well, God says he's going to give manna every day, but what if he doesn't give it tomorrow? Then what am I going to do? So then they held some. And then they open up the little plastic baggie. They have their Ziploc bag. They open it up, and woohoo! Stuff's nasty. It's full of worms. It's all stinky. And Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning, they gathered it, each as much as he could. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. So in the morning, you come out, it was like dew. It's all over the ground. You pick up what you can for the day. Then when the sun gets warm, it kind of just dissipates or melts, it disappears. But then you eat the next day. And I was thinking about how this, on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a solemn day of rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that's left lay aside to be kept till the morning. So they laid it aside till the morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. And Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none. Now, the whole issue of the Sabbath, I think really in this context and the way it worked, is it's like, it really is an element of trust. Can I trust God for tomorrow? And the one element on the 6 days, the trust is, look, I gather enough for today, and I'm going to trust God for tomorrow. On the seventh day, it's like, can I trust God that even though I don't work tomorrow, he's going to provide for me? Can I take a day and take a day off? Can I do that? How can I serve? And, you know, a lot of us, we live in a society where a lot of us make, if you're thinking about the whole point is there's an omer of oatmeal. And this would probably keep you from starving to death tomorrow. And really, by our amount of income and level of living, most of us could probably afford to buy enough omers of oatmeal to keep ourselves alive for a while without too much effort. Like, you could go get, you know, $2 worth of oatmeal, and you could live on that for a day or two, and you could do that pretty well. But you got to keep in mind that the people we're talking to about here, they're subsistence living. In Burkina Faso, they said that about 80% of the population lives below the poverty line. And their poverty line isn't the same as our poverty line. Their poverty line is if there's not rain, and they're doing those rain dances and different things, because if they don't get rain, they will starve to death. And their starvation is an issue on the continent of Africa. And we're talking about, look, they're afraid, if I take a day off, I'm not going to be able to get this much oatmeal or rye or whatever kind of grain they're going to eat. I'm going to starve to death. And so, in a certain sense, we've got, I'm not going to be able to make my payments. I'm not going to be able to pay. I'm not going to be able to have this thing or that thing or the other thing. Hey, you know what? God worked for 6 days and took a day off. And he set an example. God, when you were a slave and lost in sin and you were wasting everything you had, God pulled you out of that and he saved you. And now, you know what? He could provide for everything you need. And one of the things that's huge in our lives is to understand that with God, we've got plenty. Without God, we'll never have enough. And the whole point of the Sabbath, whether it's I celebrate the Sabbath and I'm going to try to go through all the fine points and keep every little thing here, or not, it's about I need to be reminded on a regular basis to put my focus on the Lord. I just need it. You need it. I need it. We need it. It's something that we need in our life. And okay, we don't really celebrate. I'm not really a big, as they call it, Sabbatarian. I'm not. But I do realize that we need a focus. In Hebrews, it talks about not forsaking the assembling together of the saints, because we need each other. If you do anything, it always helps to have a support group. It always helps to have people around you who are doing the same thing. That's just how human beings are. We're pack animals. My favorite Spanish saying is, tell me who you walk with and I'll tell you who you are. Because who you walk with determines who you turn out to be. You know, birds of a feather flock together. Whatever you, there's plenty of sayings. You know what those, a lot of sayings about that? It's because it's true. So we need each other. We need to be reminded that, hey, let's live for Jesus. Let's see what God's doing. We need that in our lives. And so what they had to do is, okay, if I don't get enough of this manna and I don't save it for tomorrow, what if there's none tomorrow? See, that's about trusting God. That's why Jesus, when he taught us to pray, he said, give us this day our daily bread. He didn't say, hey, you know what, God, I need bread for the next year. And I need it like right now, so it's all lined up. And I need everything taken care of for the next year. Number one, that's just a... if you think you have everything lined up for the next year, James talks to you and says, hey, you know, you who say, I'm going to go here and make this money and do this and do that, and my next year is all taken care of. And he goes, you know what? Your life's a vapor. It's here today and it's gone tomorrow. And he says, you know what? So really it boils back to every day we trust God. Every day we see, God, how are you working? God, what do you have for me? God, how can I make you the center of my life? And this Sabbath issue, I've talked to Jewish people and I listened to some radio shows that have Jewish guys. They talk about it. One guy, he was saying, look, he really liked it. He's got a show from L.A. Or, you know, and he said he really liked the Angels. and the year the Angels were in the World Series, somebody offered him tickets on Friday night to go to the Angels game during the World Series. And he's like, oh man, I really wanted to go. But then he said, you know what? It's like, well, and there's limits on how far you can walk. A day's walk is 2,000 cubits, which comes out to be a little bit under a half of a mile. And he's like, well, I could go to the game, and then I could get a hotel next to the ballpark, and then I could walk, I could go there before sunset, and then I could walk over to the hotel and still be within my limits of what I could do and make it. And then he said, he's like, you know what? That's not what this is about. Is this about me wanting to honor God or me wanting to watch a baseball game? It really comes down to that. He says, yeah, then it became easy. I'm not going to go. Not because I couldn't. Not because I couldn't get away with it. Not because this. It's because everything has to have priorities in our life. And when we put God first, yeah, is that going to change some things I do? Absolutely. And one of the things he says is, look, you're going to change your day. Your week isn't all about you. Your week, you're going to include the Lord in it. And we need that in our lives. Look, later on in the history of Israel, they didn't follow these things. They left God. They went after other gods. They did all kinds of bad things. And they were eventually punished and carried away to captivity. And part of that comes up in the book of Hosea, a verse here that I thought was kind of interesting. He says, now I will uncover her lewdness. Remember, Hosea is the story of Hosea marries a prostitute, and then she runs away, and he goes and gets her, and then brings her back. And God says, his wife's name was Gomer, and she was a prostitute. And God says to Israel, you are Gomer, and you've gone prostituting yourself to other gods, and now you're going to be punished. And so that's kind of this where he is right here. He says, now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her out of my hand. And I will put an end to all her mirth, her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all her appointed feasts. And God's saying, you know what? These Sabbaths, these feasts, these days off, the mirth, the happiness, the joy, the blessing, I'm going to take that away. You're going to go away. You're going to be a captive. You're going to be a slave. You don't want, kind of like the Burger King slogan, have it your way. You don't have to do this. Go. I'm taking it. Not only that, but you don't get it both ways. You're going to have God or you're not. And that's what he says. Now, I was thinking about this to kind of understand how we would look at these things from the New Testament point of view. I just did a summary. I didn't really want to go through a huge study of every time the Sabbath comes up in the New Testament because that's more of a series of messages than one message. But let's just talk about Jesus and the Sabbath. And I'm just going to give you some quick points here. You can look them up. Number one, Jesus did not ignore the Sabbath. Jesus did not. Jesus worshipped on the Sabbath and he kept the Sabbath. Jesus worshipped on the Sabbath. And in Luke 4, it says, talking about Jesus, it says, he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up and as was his custom, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day and he stood up to read. So Jesus went to the synagogue on the Sabbath as was his custom. So it wasn't like, because we're going to read some other verses where people were upset because he didn't quote unquote keep the Sabbath. But according to this, his custom was he went and got into the word with the other believers on the Sabbath. That was what he did. That was his custom. Now, one Sabbath, he picked grain. Him and his disciples, remember, they were walking through the fields. They were hungry. They reached down, got some grains, and then they kind of took the little husks off the seeds and ate the seeds. Now, and then they said, look, you guys are violating the Sabbath. Why? Because you're working on the Sabbath. Now, I would have thought that, you know, my initial feeling would be, wait a second, you're stealing somebody else's wheat. No, they could totally do that. That was within the law. It was clearly defined. If you're walking through somebody's field and you're hungry, you can have a handful to eat. That's cool. Now, you can't take a basket and a sickle and start, like, harvesting the guy's crops. But you could take a handful and eat it. You're not going to hurt anything. So that nobody said anything about that. But they said, look, it's the Sabbath. And then Jesus used the example. He said, wait, remember David? and his men when they were running away from Saul, and they got they were hungry, and they went to the tabernacle, and there was the showbread that only the priests are supposed to eat, but then he gave that to them and they ate it because they were hungry. And he says, look, it's about people. The Sabbath is meant to be a blessing. The Sabbath is meant to be, look, you get a day off. You get a day to kind of reflect on your life and look at what God's doing and just enjoy the blessings that God's giving you. And so it wasn't like, oh, you have to go hungry and you can't eat because this bread wasn't really made for you. No. And he says, then look, our guys we're not walking too far. We're walking. They ate a little bit of seeds, and, you know, that's okay. That's not what that means. And then he healed on the Sabbath. And he healed several times, this came up. There was one time right after the time where they picked the grain. It's in the context, the next little passage is, he's in the synagogue on the Sabbath. And there's a guy with a withered hand. And so the guy's got his hand all withered, you know, his hand's messed up. And then Jesus looks at the guy and he's like, you know, hey, can you do something for me? And it says that specifically that Jesus looked at the guy and looked at the leaders around him and said, hey, is it okay to do good on the Sabbath? And then nobody will say anything. And then he says, look, stretch out your hand. And the guy stretches out his hand. He's healed. Another case, Jesus is at the pool of Bethesda in John 5. And there he says, there's a guy, and he says, look, when the water stirred up, if whoever's in first gets healed. And then he says, Jesus says, well, how long have you been? He's like 30 some years. Well, why didn't you get in? Well, every time it stirs up, I try to get there, but I can't move, and somebody else gets in before me, and I've been sitting here all this time. And Jesus says, take up your bed and walk. And so he gets up and walks off, and he's healed. And then they start attacking Jesus because it was a Sabbath. And then there's another time in John where there's a man born blind, and the disciples ask him, hey, who sinned for this man to be born blind? Him or his parents? And Jesus said, neither he nor his parents sinned. This was so God's glory could be shown. And so then he gave him some mud. He spit on the ground, made mud, put some mud. I don't know that this is actual treatment. I wouldn't really try this if your eyes are bothering you. But he put some mud on his eyes. Then he went and washed his eyes, and he could see. And then they said, wait a second, he did that on the Sabbath. And Jesus said, look, if you have a donkey that falls into a ditch on the Sabbath, are you going to let it die, or are you going to go pull it out? And everybody knew they'd pull it out. And he goes, look, if you can help your animal, I can help a person. And that part of, even to this day, the Jews, one of the examples I said was they have the exception to save a life. And, you know, that can be stretched around however you want to make it. But the reality is, what's Jesus saying? Sometimes I think we take these things and go, well, Jesus, he healed on the Sabbath. He fed his guys on the Sabbath. He just ignored the Sabbath. No, he didn't ignore it. His custom was to go to the synagogue and do that. But there were times where, hey, you got to, there's something going on here that's bigger than this. I think the example is, one of the things that I think this really just boils down to, look, am I going to put God first in my life? And that's what the Sabbath is really about. Look, Romans 14 talks about this. It says, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. Okay. One person, you may have a friend that goes, look, we have to keep the Sabbath. That's cool. Are you doing it for the Lord? Are you trying to honor God with that? Good, do it. Another person goes, well, I don't really think that's the law. I think that's not applicable today because we're in the New Testament. Okay, fine. You're not keeping the Sabbath. Are you doing that for the Lord? Let the one who observes the day, observe it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. While the one who abstains, because some people, well, you can eat this, you can't eat that. It kind of tends to go together. But the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord. and gives thanks to God. The one who observes the day, so then each one of us will give an account of himself to God. And part of this boils down to that at the end of the day, you're going to stand before God. And God's not going to say, look, you know what, John, like to me he might say that, he'd say, John, did other people around you honor me with their lives? And I'm, well, no. And, well, then that's not the question. The question is, did you? What did you do? How did you honor me? Did you trust me? Did you trust that I could take care of your needs tomorrow? Did you trust that I can take a minute and take a focus on God and the blessings that he's put in my life today? Can I do that? Or am I like, no, it's about me and I've got to work more hours, more days, more time, more this, more that, because if I don't, my whole life's going to fall apart. Or can I go, you know what? Work's done. God, you're in control. I'm going to hand this off to you. And I'm going to be thankful for what you put into my life. In Hebrews 3, there's one other element of this I want to say. And that is Hebrews 3 and 4. There's a passage here where he talks about the people of Israel, and they were in the wilderness, kind of like that time in Leviticus where they had the bread and then it gets moldy with worms and that. And he says, therefore I was provoked with that generation and said, they will always go astray in their hearts. They have not known my ways. As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. And the word rest there is really the word Sabbath. It comes into this whole idea of getting the rest, the day of rest. God on the seventh day, he rested. And this was the picture of this. And he says, look, they're being rebellious. They won't enter into my rest. And then he talks in Hebrews 4. He goes on, this is something you can study, but it's, so then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. And really, when we talked about the Passover, the lamb, the Passover is Jesus. The first fruits are Jesus. The unleavened bread is a picture of sinlessness of Jesus. The tabernacles that we give thanks to God for what Jesus has done. And really the Sabbath, Jesus is our Sabbath. Jesus is our rest. And how we quit striving, thinking that if I do this dance and hold off the spirits, and yeah, we look at Africa and, well, that's kind of like strange culture to me at least, and probably to you too, but and kind of can look at that. But on the other hand, the reality is everybody comes from that. Everybody's doing your little dance and put on your little mask to hold off your little demons. And the only rest you really find is when you put your faith in Christ. And then that's where true rest really comes from. And us striving and, well, I want, you know, like our drive can be all kinds of things. I want more money. Okay. I'm going to work, work, work. I want more money so I can have more fun. Because fun, 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 fun. I want more money so I can have more fun or more things or this or that. Or I don't want to work because I just want to do what I'm going to do. And I don't want anybody telling me anything. And I'm just the boss of my life. It all boils down to I'm the boss of my life. And the Sabbath and recognizing God is recognizing, first of all, I'm not the boss. Jesus is the Lord. He's the Lord of my life. So let's kind of talk about the Sabbath here. Really, the thing boils down to putting God, let's look, priority. Here we go. The priority is who's controlling my life? What's first in my life? What's the thing that's driving my life? And if I don't get that straight, everything else is out of whack. And the reality is I've really entered into the Sabbath when I recognize that Jesus is the Sabbath. He is the rest. He is the peace. He is the one who's going to make my life something good, something worth living. And then obey. And God, what do you want me to do with my life? One of the things at the risk of embarrassing Daniel, which, you know, he's my son. He's 30 years old, so he's been embarrassed plenty of times by me. But one of the things that I was really impressed with when Daniel went to law school was everybody said, no, you can't. You have to study every single day. Now, there were a couple exceptions when he had a class on Sunday or right before something. There were a couple exceptions, but very, very few. And other than that, he was here every Sunday, and he played in the worship team, and he was leading the worship team at the time. And you know what? And they said, well, you can't make it through like that. You can't make it through like that. Well, the one thing that I know that Daniel did is he goes, well, I can't, I don't know if I'm going to make it through or not make it through, but I do know that for 6 days I can be the first one in the library, and on those 6 days I can be the last one out of the library. And then I'm taking a day off and trusting God for the results. And then when he did that, and no, you can't do that. Well, you can. Then they said, well, you're not going to make it through there. Well, out of 200 and some students, they rank them all in order. That's one of the big things about law schools. They rank everybody in order. So he ended up number 2 out of 220 some. So it seems like I think, like I say, we're embarrassing Daniel today. So, but, you know, it's embarrassed Daniel day. That's okay. But you know what I mean? Obviously, I think he's gifted in what he was doing. But also, it's work hard. But take a day off. Work hard. Take a rest. Realize that the work is in the Lord. Realize that the true work that'll save you, that really can give you peace and joy and happiness in your life, that's already been done. You were a slave in Egypt, and God pulled you out of that. God set the example. He worked six. He made everything in 6 days, and then he rested. Sometimes we kind of live in a society where we're supposed to feel guilty if we rest. Don't feel guilty for resting. Now, look, if you don't work on any of the other six, maybe you should feel a little guilty for resting on the seventh. But look, work hard, play hard, rest hard. And trust God for, you know, some people are going to, some people, because of your gifts and skill set and talent, you'll work hard and you'll make a lot of money. Or you'll work hard and you'll maybe really enjoy the work. And some people, you'll work just as hard and you won't make nearly as much money. Just the way it is. But you know what? God is God. And God can take care of every single one of us. And really the Sabbath is about taking God at his word. And trusting him that Jesus really paid the full price. He wants to give me what I need. Look, I wanted to say a couple things just to kind of close out. One, we're getting to a time of year that's really, really busy. One of the things I don't like about Christmas season, there's kind of the focus on Jesus, but that's kind of the focus, but most of the focus is on shopping, this, a million things going on, events, don't have any time for anything. You know what? Each week, there's like 3 or 4 weeks till Christmas, each week, take a moment, sit down, take a breath, and you know what? If you don't get that last cookie frosted, I can pretty much guarantee that the world is going to continue spinning on its axis and really not much is going to change. And you sit here and go, you know what? True peace, true rest comes in Jesus. And each day of your life, look at it like, man, you know what? God has something for me today. And what can I get from, what Lord, what do you want? And just focus on him. So, look, but that takes trust. It's like, oh, there's manna. I got to have, oh, but what if it's not tomorrow? I got to get more. Oh, it's all rotten. Well, what about this day? What's going to happen? I'm supposed to gather twice as much, but it all turned rotten before. Now what's going to happen? Just trust God. Obey. Just turn it down a notch and go, hey, Sabbaths are a blessing. A break is a blessing. Trust God. Take a break. And trust God that the true break and true rest you've already got in Jesus Christ. You know, we've been doing the celebration each week. We've had like special food to go with it. Today is the challah bread because that's a typical Sabbath food. And Monique and Beth made challah bread. I'm not sure if anybody else did too. Did somebody else? Did Katie make some too? Good. Maybe somebody else. I'm not in on all the details of everybody's kitchen, but there should be challah bread out there, and that'll be a blessing. But look, we're going to pray, and what I'd like you to do is to take a moment and just commit your life and say, Lord, I want to put my trust in you. I want to obey you. I want you to be the priority of my life. And then, God, I believe that Jesus did it all, and he's offering me the rest that only he can offer. Let's pray. Father, we thank you. We praise you for your goodness. We thank you for who you are, for what you're doing and what you've done, and how you provide for our needs, and how, Lord, you want us to not only work hard, but then to reflect and rest and enjoy the fruits of our labors. And then, Father, ultimately, it comes down to trusting that the fruit of the labor is what Jesus did on the cross, and that he's the one who gives us true peace, true rest. And Lord, we don't want to be, oh, so-and-so keeps this day and they're wrong, or so-and-so doesn't and they're wrong. It's about putting our heart right with you, Father. I just pray, Father, that we would speak, you would speak to our hearts, that we would come before you rested and working hard on the days where we should work, and rest hard when we should rest. And Lord, just to take the pressure off and go, Lord, we ask you to provide for our daily bread. We ask you to take care of our daily needs. We ask you, Father, to supply what we need. And then, Father, we trust that you will.